The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
About tonight is wise and mindful speech, especially in the context of practicing in our daily lives. You know, this aspect of wise speech is right embedded in what the Buddha taught for the Eightfold Path. It is one of the factors of the Eightfold Path. And so to me, this really shows just how important the Buddha thought this was. He wasn't just about sitting in silence and closing our eyes and breathing, but his teachings encompassed all aspects of our lives. And speech is a huge area for us in our lives and a great area of it's a great avenue by which we tend to get in trouble with our relationships. You know, often we, I think probably all of us have some example in our lives of something that we said that we immediately regretted, and seeing just the impact of that, speech, how it affects others, how it affects ourselves. So this exploration is a great area for us in terms of exploring how we can learn to relate through speech in a skillful way, in a way that doesn't cause harm. I think it's probably helpful in this day and age also to explore the many forms of communication that we have, emailing, texting, whatever else, tweeting, I don't know all the things. I actually acknowledged today that I have never sent a text in my life. So I'm a little bit behind the curve on this on the technology. But I do email, and I think it is a great it's great practice to bring these same teachings into our written communications as well as our verbal communications. In terms of practicing with speech in daily life, this I think is an important piece that, normally in sitting practice, we're closing our eyes, we're sitting in stillness, and what we're doing a lot, often, is cultivating silence and settledness in our hearts and minds. And a lot of that practice is about letting go of our thoughts and just coming back to being here and recognizing that often in our meditation and in our lives, our thoughts are creating worlds of unreality and pulling us out of what's actually happening in the present moment. And so a lot of our work in meditation has to do with seeing this distinction, seeing how our thoughts create these worlds, and letting go of the content of our thoughts, especially in meditation. Well, this practice of mindful speech brings us right into engaging with our content, engaging with how we are thinking about the world and what we're thinking about saying. And so this practice of mindful speech includes looking at content. And that's a big difference, I think, and it's a big part of our daily life practice exploration that we start to include the content of our thoughts in our awareness. If we think by meditating and letting go of our thoughts that we're practicing the whole of mindfulness, we're really missing a big piece because we're not practicing being mindful of the content of our thoughts so much in our sitting meditation. And this is a big area for us. If we're not looking at how to be mindful of the content of our thoughts, there's going to be huge chunks of our daily life that we cannot be mindful. And so this area of mindful speech begins to take us into this terrain of being mindful of content. I think it's a huge exploration, a very important exploration for us. Practicing with mindful speech helps to sharpen our mindfulness in daily life, because we talk a lot in daily life. And so if we can start to be aware of speech and have the mindfulness begin to move into that terrain, I sometimes think of mindfulness beginning to infiltrate new areas of experience. If we can have mindfulness start to infiltrate our speech, there, it really can start to deepen and expand our mindfulness practice. Right, speech is pretty challenging. I think probably most of you have some inkling of that, how hard it is to speak and be aware while you're speaking. It seems that as soon as our mouths open, we're so... This is this area of how content takes us away. You know, as soon as we're engaged in talking, we're engaged in what we're talking about, and we kind of move into the world of that, those ideas, and lose touch with what's actually happening in the present moment. And so it's not necessary to lose touch with the present moment when we are speaking. It's just a very strong habit for us. One of my teachers, in exploring activity in daily life, he encouraged beyond mindful speech and in all activity, he said, it's really helpful to think about our mindfulness in daily life as having 50% of the attention on the content of what we're doing and 50% of the attention in our experience. And the way I like to think about this is that we keep track of what's going on, keep track of the content of our lives, and then see how does that content impact us? We are impacted by our experience. We see something in the world and it impacts us. We hear something on the radio and it impacts us. It creates feelings. It creates responses. And so can we kind of navigate the world by knowing what we're in contact with, not just shutting down and just turning inwardly, but keeping touch with what's happening in the world and at the same time keeping touch with what's happening inside. So this is challenging for us. It's a difficult area for us to bring mindfulness to speech. We usually just speak automatically without knowing what we're going to say or often even knowing that we're speaking. And much less often do we take the time to consider how our speech may impact others. As other things in the world impact us, things that we do impact others. And this kind of reciprocity is important to consider in our mindfulness practice, to consider how will our speech, our actions land in the world. And for this, the Buddha offered some guidelines for us for wise speech. And I'm just going to briefly name them here, and in a few minutes I'll come back and talk about them in more depth. So the guidelines for wise speech, as with other areas of ethical conduct, ethical exploration in the Buddhist teaching, are framed as things to avoid as opposed to things to do. So the Buddha suggested that we avoid false speech, harsh speech, divisive speech, and idle chatter. And as I said, I'll come back to those in a minute. The overarching theme of why the Buddha suggests we avoid these kinds of speech is because they tend to create harm and or confusion in the world. And so this is really the overarching principle for why to avoid these kinds of speech. It's not like a cut and dried thing of, this is right, this is wrong. Right and wrong is not really a part of I don't know, that's not quite the right way to say it. the orientation about ethics in the Buddha's teaching is not so much about this is right, do it because it's right, this is wrong, don't do it because it's wrong, but it's more practical than that, and it's more nuanced in that the Buddha was looking to solve a problem in his life when he explored freedom from suffering. The question he asked himself is it possible to be free from suffering in this life? And that exploration took him to explore that the suffering that we experience is not so much about the objective stuff happening in the world. He talked about the eight worldly winds, things that blow through all of our lives that will just happen. Praise and blame, gain and loss, fame and disrepute, pleasure and pain. Those things are going to happen for us. And that what he discovered is that the suffering that comes to us, or the suffering that we experience, is not so much about those events in our lives, but more about our reaction to them. And so we react, we respond with greed, aversion, delusion, confusion. And that's where our suffering comes from. And so he found that in exploring what is helpful to us to end suffering, it's about exploring what helps us to let go of greed, aversion, and delusion in the mind. And these types of speech, he pointed out, if you're speaking in these ways, there's almost certainly greed, aversion, and delusion in your minds. And so his suggestion is to avoid things that cultivate those states of mind. And so the ethical teachings in Buddhism are more about what allows us to let go of the direction heading us towards suffering and what allows us to move towards happiness. So it's not about right and wrong as much as the Buddha saying, do you want to be happy in your life? Engage in these ways. Don't do these things. That these things will take you in the direction of unhappiness, of suffering. Now, perhaps not immediately. I mean, this is something that, you know, in speech in particular, we may find, a white lie, for example. You know, we think a little white lie, it might make us feel better for a little while. You know, we've managed to not tell somebody something that we didn't want to tell them. And so we think, oh, well, that's led to less suffering in my life. Well, perhaps it's led to less suffering in a small way. And yet somebody I was talking to earlier pointed out how she saw that in a small white lie, there was hours of agitation of thinking about, oh, God, I said that thing, I told that white lie, and now I got to be careful about how I talk about things with that person. So it added a kind of a stress to the mind to have done that. So these kinds of wise speech, of avoiding false speech, harsh speech, divisive speech, and idle chatter, are designed to help us to let go of the unwholesome, unskillful intentions that can motivate our speech. So a lot of this is around intention, looking at intention, or the ethical conduct is framed around exploring the intentions behind our actions, because it's the intentions, the Buddha said, was most important. You know, for instance, in terms of like the precept of refraining from killing living beings. And just thinking about this as an example of the intention being an important component for these ethical precepts. Imagine, you know, if you see a spider on the wall and you pick up a shoe to kill it, you know, there's an intention in your mind to harm there, probably some aversion, maybe some fear that you're acting on to kill that spider. And then imagine you're walking across the lawn and you step on a spider you don't even know is there. So the killing happened. You did the killing in both times, where your body was in responsible for the killing in both times. But the mind, the state of the mind, was very different in those two circumstances. In one case, you didn't even know the spider was there. You may not have even known that the spider died. So the exploration around our wise speech is a lot about looking at intention. So intentions, and intention is kind of the motivating force that has us act. There's an intention that precedes every action we do, everything we say, and even everything that happens in our minds. There's an impulse that precedes that. These intentions to act can be consciously aware of them, or we may not be consciously aware of them. When we're not consciously aware of them, this is where we get into trouble a lot of the time. Because when we're not consciously aware of that we're getting ready to speak, or not consciously aware of why we're getting ready to speak, our habits, our conditioning are making those choices for us. And largely the habits of mind, the habits of mind are what tend to take us towards our habitual reactivity, our habitual ways of responding, reacting to situations that make us feel uncomfortable or confused. We tend to react to those. And often the intention and the motivation behind that intention are below the level of our conscious awareness. We don't see them. So this is where mindfulness comes in. With mindfulness, we can start to be able to see these impulses to act. In particular, we can start to more clearly see the impulses to act in body and to say something. And with that ability, with mindfulness being able to touch into getting ready to act before we act, we have the option to begin to see why we're going to act and maybe recognize, gosh, I'm getting ready to say something, and you know, there's a lot of hostility right now in my mind getting ready to come out in my speech. Maybe I should be quiet. Maybe I shouldn't say that. So the mindfulness begins to let us see these intentions and allows us some level of choice, some measure of choice about how to engage. Sometimes the four kinds of wise speech are also explored as exploring our inner speech, how we talk to ourselves. And this is an interesting exploration too, although the practice of seeing whether we're engaging in false speech, harsh speech, divisive speech in our minds, or idle chatter. I think we engage in a lot of idle chatter in our minds. but the seeing that we're doing that can be helpful to see, I'm telling myself this thing. Wow, I'm speaking to myself really harshly. So it can be helpful to see that, or to question, you know, we say things to ourselves like, you're a failure. You know, is it true? Is it actually true? I mean, just to begin to look at our inner speech also in terms of these guidelines. Now, the place that the looking at our inner talk differs, I think, from the outer talk is at this level of intention, because thoughts often simply appear. The intention to think is a very subtle intention. It's much harder to see the intention to think and kind of have a sense of the direction the mind is headed in our thoughts than it is to catch an action of body or an action of getting ready to open the mouth and form words to speak. So these guidelines around wise speech, they're much easier to put into place and actually commit to them almost, commit to them as precepts. It's much easier to put them into place and choose to not speak in these ways than it is to tell yourself, don't think in these ways. You know, if you are thinking, if you think that you should be able to turn off certain kinds of thoughts in your mind, that's probably going to be a recipe for self-condemnation, because our thoughts are, it takes quite a bit of mindfulness to begin to really watch our thoughts with mindfulness. So it takes quite a bit of practice and quite a bit of, it takes time to get to that place. And so while it can be helpful to recognize our inner speech, wow, that was harsh speech, or that was divisive speech, it's more helpful to use it in terms of recognition than it is to try to say, stop doing that. The recognition itself helps us to see, wow, that's not so helpful. And in seeing that it's not so helpful, the mind may start to let it go. But with wise speech, with actually looking at speech, we're actually looking at seeing if we can refrain from speaking in these ways. One of my teachers, Sayadaw Utejaniya, said that he took on these types of wise speech as actual precepts in his life. Most of you are probably aware of the five precepts. Refraining from killing living beings, refraining from taking what's not given, refraining from sexual misconduct, refraining from false speech, and refraining from intoxicants. So the basic five guidelines for our conduct in the world to support non-harming in the world. And so one of them includes speech, refraining from false speech. My teacher said it's at one point, well, I'll read this to you. One of the practices I did when I was a layman, is he became a monk kind of late in his life, and so he was a businessman for quite a bit of his life. One of the practices I did when I was a layman was keeping the usual five precepts plus an extension of the speech precept. I tried not only not to lie, but also undertook to abstain from harsh speech, from slander and backbiting, and from idle talk. I soon found that I needed a lot of mindfulness to keep all these speech precepts, and that is when my practice really started zooming. So we could think of these as the eight lay precepts, which includes this extension of these extra three aspects of wise speech. So just a little bit about each one. So false speech, it's the one that's, I think, highlighted. It's highlighted in the precepts. You know, in terms of our speech, we really want to speak the truth. There was a statement the Buddha made to his own son. His son was about 7 years old at the time, and you get the idea in this discourse that his son had told a lie, because he's giving him this teaching about how it's like throwing away the goodness in you when you tell a lie, and he said to his son, you shouldn't even tell a lie as a joke, because he kind of basically said it's kind of the slippery slope down to all kinds of other unwholesome actions in your life. So the Buddha really highlighted refraining from false speech. So false speech is speech intending to deceive. So here's where the intention comes in. It is speech that intends to deceive. And this can be motivated by greed, aversion, or delusion. And we might lie in order to gain something for ourselves. We might lie intending to hurt or to damage others out of anger. Or we might simply lie because we want to avoid something unpleasant, which would be out of aversion. You know, we might lie to get out of something that we don't want to do. Or we might lie out of delusion. These are the three basic unwholesome roots of mind. Might want to exaggerate a story to make it more interesting, or to bring in humor into a story. So I had an example of this, and this was a good demonstration of how it seemed like a kind of a white lie to me. I was in the Peace Corps a number of years ago, and was writing letters home to my family, and a lot of my friends told me all kinds of various fun stories about what was happening to them. And for one of those stories, I decided to tell that story in the first person instead of as if my friend had told it to me. So it wasn't it wasn't something I had done. But so I put it in there as if that had happened to me. And somebody had told me once, stories are more interesting told in the first person. People like them better that way. So, you know, it's just like, oh, this is harmless, you know. And for years after that, my mom, whenever I was in a room and with a bunch of people, she would say, oh, that was such a good story. Why don't you tell that story? And I would just be quiet for the longest time, you know, for years. I just didn't go there. So I didn't want to, at this point, far enough into my practice, I didn't want to perpetuate the lie. But it was years before I finally, in one gathering, it was a gathering of very close Dharma friends, and my parents had come to visit, my mom really loved this story. She kept wanting to bring it up. and she brought it up again with these Dharma friends. And at that point, I just decided, this is it. This is the time. I said, Mom, that's not my story. It was told, and I told her what had happened. And then she said, it was interesting, she said, all those people I lied to. And one of my Dharma friends said, you didn't lie. You know, that's where the intention comes in. She thought she was telling the truth because she thought I had told the truth. So, you know, this was like years of this coming back at me over and over again. A little white lie, you know. So this was delusion. That was delusion in my mind, right? That was delusion. I wasn't particularly greedy or averse around anything. It was just I wanted to make the story look better. I mean, that might have been a little bit of greed, but you know, it was mostly delusion operating. So there's some gray areas here. And one thing sometimes people feel is that refraining from false speech or not lying means not concealing anything. And the Buddha didn't actually say that. He also spoke actually about saying things at appropriate times and saying things that were beneficial. And so even when something is true, he said we need to additionally look at, is this the right time to say it? Is it beneficial for this gathering to say this? So, it's not necessarily going against the precept to not say something. You have to look at your intention there. So look at your intention. Are you actively trying to conceal something, to deceive in not speaking? That's where the precept comes in. Are you trying, if it is in not saying something, you're deceiving, then that's something worth looking at. And then telling white lies, for instance, you know, this may be an area that we'd want to look at. You know, often we find ourselves perhaps telling white lies because we maybe don't want to hurt somebody. And that's, at least for me, a place I've seen that kind of intention come. And, you know, at this point, I try to find a different way to say something so that it, you know, it wouldn't hurt the person. You know, so this may be, again, an area of potentially not revealing everything, but also not lying. Like, you know, if your friend calls you and says, oh, let's go out together or something, and you're going out with somebody and you know that they wish they could come with you. And so you might say, oh, I'm not feeling well tonight or something, as opposed to saying, oh, I have other plans. You know, you don't have to tell the person that you're going out with this person that, you know, that they'd want to go with, but to not bring the deception into the picture. Sometimes the question comes up here around, you know, people who lied, who lie to protect a life. And, you know, with that kind of thing, sometimes teachers say, well, see if you can find ways to not, you know, lie. But, you know, my sense is, in that kind of, if that kind of an immediate situation, I think I would lie to protect a life. And I would take the ramifications of telling a lie for the greater good of protecting a life. So that's potentially an area of, you know, looking at. It's not to say that it's okay to lie, but which is the greater good, which is the lesser evil here. Then divisive speech. This is speech intended to divide us from each other, to create separation, to create division. Again, it can be motivated from greed, aversion, or delusion. It might be motivated that creating a division may somehow give us something that we want. Creating a division often happens with aversion of, you know, fear of other, self and other, you know, us and them, you know, that the movement to divide with speech often has this sense of protection or safety, that kind of thing, which can be motivated by fear, aversion. I'm going to move on a little quickly here because I see that I don't have a lot of time left. Then harsh speech is speech that's uttered with harsh tone, harsh intent. It may be harsh words, harsh language, or harsh tone. It's intended to cause the hearer pain. In this case, one of the things I think we're most interested in exploring is, can we speak without using the harsh language or harsh tone in our voice? It's not about suppressing the feeling. And I think this is important, that in our exploration of speech, in terms of engaging in speech that is not intending to harm. We often cannot control our emotions. You know, we're feeling the anger, we're feeling the resentment, we're feeling the hostility. And often those things do come out in our actions. And so the precepts are designed to help keep those unskillful, reactive mental formations, those mental activities, from landing in the world and creating harm. So the point here isn't to suppress the feelings in order not to speak harshly or with divisiveness, but rather, the way I like to look at it, you know, see if you can allow the feeling and yet not allow it to move into our speech. That may mean not speaking. That may mean just saying, you know, just acknowledging, wow, there's a lot of anger here. This is not a good time to speak. It also may mean, it may be possible to see in, you know, as we get better with mindful speech, it may be possible to see kind of the framing of words that are coming out of the mouth, that are getting ready to come out of the mouth, and recognize that a key choice of a word or two could be substituted with other words. Like, you might be really frustrated with something somebody did and be about to tell them how stupid it was, what they did. And, instead you might see, you know, you might be able to catch yourself and say, gosh, why did you do that? You know, can you help me understand why you did that? Something like that. So that the harshness of the, you know, the word stupid and probably the tone would be mitigated. And then there's idle chatter. The Pali term for this I particularly like. I looked it up this afternoon. I didn't quite have it right this morning when I talked about this. Sampapalapa. That's what it is. Sampapalapa. Idle speech. It kind of sounds like what it is. Sampapalapa. It's pointless talk that has nothing of value, adds nothing of value. So this is an area, you know, this is an area for us to explore. We do engage in a lot of this kind of talk. And, you know, it basically, the intention here, refraining from this, the intention is that this kind of talk just, you know, fills the mind with a lot of clutter. It doesn't fill the mind with anything of value. So the monastics in particular are encouraged to keep their talk to the Dharma. But it's said that lay people will have a need to engage in small talk with friends and family, you know, for purposes of creating connection. So this is a place for us to look, you know, again, at intention. We, you know, might talk about the weather with somebody or talk about something we heard on the radio with somebody as a means to find a way to find connection with that person. So it's the looking at the intention. Is the intention to create a sense of friendliness, of kind of a shared ground from which you can then carry on? Or perhaps, I mean, one of the reasons I think we engage in idle chatter is because we're nervous. We don't know what to say. You know, that the motivation is basically a subtle fear rather than actually trying to connect. So again, really, it's important to look at the intention behind our speech, especially in this area. So with wise speech, this is an area that as I said, it's quite challenging. And one of the reasons it's so challenging is that we don't really practice it. We often practice our mindfulness in sitting meditation. You know, we practice stillness and we practice with our eyes closed. We get relatively good at coming back over and over again and checking into the present moment while we're in sitting meditation. And then we kind of think, wow, I want to be able to be mindful while I'm speaking. Why doesn't it carry over? You know, why can't I practice all this mindfulness while sitting? Why can't I be mindful while I'm speaking? We need to practice. And one thing that I'd like to suggest is really helpful. If you're thinking you're going to try to practice this right in the midst of the most difficult conversations that you have, or right in the midst of engagement at work, or you know, whatever kind of conversations you usually have, that's like thinking you're going to try to learn how to play basketball by putting yourself right into the middle of an NBA game. You know, it's like you don't start there. You start a place where it's more simple, more structured. And so one place to begin is with your written communications, because that is more slowed down. So your emails, your texts, you know, see if you can remember to practice mindfulness. I mean, you might on your computer or your cell phone, you know, put a little sticky or something, or have it pop up a bell or something. You know, these devices have so many different things that can remind us about things. So, you know, give yourself a reminder to try to remember to practice these kinds of wise speech in writing emails. So this is a way we can bring this into practice. You know, that's kind of the equivalent to sitting in silent meditation. We're doing it in the privacy of our own place, without other people interacting with us in real time. Then you might want to explore having a mindful lunch date with somebody and having an agreement, you know, a Sangha friend, a Dharma buddy, having an agreement. Let's see if we can help each other be mindful while speaking in this lunch date. Let's practice that. I did that with one friend. And we were pretty good about it. And at one point, I saw something come up in my mind. I realized I'm getting ready to say something. And I saw something come up in my mind, and I thought, oh, I could say that. And then I realized there was either some slightly divisive or some slightly gossipy thing, and it's like, oh, shouldn't say that. And this went on for like 3 minutes. I was ruling things out. Shouldn't say that. Oh, shouldn't say that. So I was sitting there quietly. He was sitting there quietly. And I said, I'm sitting here ruling things out to say. And I could say that. But it was really helpful to take that opportunity with a Dharma friend and start to practice. We need practice before taking it into our everyday lives. So that's all I have time for tonight. I hope this has been helpful. You can come up.